Minasan konnichiwa. Welcome to the Board Game Dojo, where, oh my goodness, we have a couple of visitors today because this is going to be our first monthly roundup of an episode where there's no rules. We're like kids that just went off to college for the first time. You can't tell me how to make a podcast. We just do what we want. My name is Eric.
My name is Ben, and I'm getting pointed at because I'm not responding on time.
And I'm Jada. I went last. That was easy for me to know when to come in.
Yeah, I mean, you're only coming in last during this part. You come in first for basically all the games we play online. So it's just a nice change of pace, really. I wanted to feel like I was in the lead for something.
Thanks for that. Thanks for that.
But this is just kind of a chance, an opportunity that now we have three different hosts going for the Board Game Dojo, and you're mostly hearing my voice, which is just unfortunate for all of you. So this is a chance to just kind of get to know who we are in case you are not listening to every single episode out there. So if you're kind of new, I'm going to let these two guests kind of introduce themselves and what they're doing on the podcast. So we can start with Jaina this time, so I don't get told that she went last twice in a row.
Ah, good call. Good call. Hi, so I'm Jaina, and I talk about board game history, mostly history of board game mechanism. So generally speaking, I'm going to pick a mechanism. My most recent one was trick taking, and I'm going to trace it as far back as I can go and kind of bring it up to the future to see how did this form, what changed, what happened, how did we get to where we are now, and sometimes I'll even try and guess where we might be going in the future.
Ooh, a fortune teller. I didn't know I hired one. That's pretty cool.
I know, right? Well, maybe I'll talk about tarot cards in my next episode. Who can say?
And how about you, Ben? Who are you?
Good question.
See, I even did a British band for you.
Oh, yeah. Good question. Who am I? I've done a few conversations with you on the podcast before. We've did the board games around the world, picking different board games and trying to hop around the world to different places. But most of my time is spent running travelgames.co.uk, company in the UK which imports board games from all over the place. Quite a lot from Japan and Korea. As you can guess from the name, I quite like travel, so I'm going to be chatting more on the Board Game Dojo podcast, interviewing different people to get their perspectives on traveling around the world playing board games, so a bit of both, and trying to learn some new things. At the moment, my focus is on Japan for when I go to Japan, completely selfish there, finding out all the tips and tricks from everyone I can, and sharing them with you guys, so hopefully that's of some interest, and we will move to different countries as well as we move on. So,
but yeah, both of those editions are going to be awesome on the Board Game Dojo podcast. So how it's going to work is that Jaina's feed is going to be on our normal feed as soon as they are done. We are going to be kind of going back and forth on scholarship episodes every 2 weeks. So her history of trick-taking episode was 2 weeks ago. Mine says this week. Then hers will be in 2 weeks, and so on and so forth. Ben's are going to start off. Yeah, you probably should.
Good, cool. Yeah, homework time. Gotcha.
Probably. But I mean, it's always like the pressure. You get more done faster when you're under pressure.
Absolutely.
Yep. Panic monster.
And then, and then Ben's is going to start off as exclusives to our patrons and for those who have bought the Tokyo Game Market boxes. And then they will be released on the feed after a few months. So both of those you'll be able to hear, but maybe after different amounts of time. So if you do want to listen to both of those immediately, you can go and back us. But this is kind of meant to be, I'm stealing this kind of idea from Blue Peg Pink Peg, who a very successful podcast that we can only dream of kind of thing. But in the first part of every single one of their podcasts, they are kind of just kind of talking about themselves and their personal lives and kind of how board games are related to each other. And so I thought that that would be a pretty cool format. If you like this idea, I'll probably post a tweet on it or Instagram post about it, and you can comment on that or join us on the Discord. And we have a whole section on podcast episode discussions. You should totally talk to us there. We're all there. We're all mods. Who would have thought? But you can talk to us about it there. But the first question, when I was researching how to really, you know, lead personal talk discussions on a podcast, It seems like you have to ask, what is everyone drinking tonight?
Oh, I like that.
So you have to not only tell me what you're drinking, but how to mix the drink. If you are there, please tell me that. So we'll start with Ben. I don't mean this to be an interview, so you guys can like talk as normal.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely fine. I'm drinking the very kind of exciting beverage that is tap water. And you mix it by getting the glass out of the cupboard and turning the tap on.
Do you aerate it? Did you need to let it sit and breathe for a certain amount of time?
You do run the tap for a little while to make sure it comes through cold, because you don't want that kind of sat in the pipes water. That's no good.
Gotcha. Okay, I'm going to try that.
Yep.
I'm going to see how that goes. That sounds delicious.
I might even get a cocktail stick, cocktail umbrella for next time to go in my fancy water.
Nice.
Wow, very good. Very good. Gina, what are you drinking tonight?
Okay, so your tonight is actually my morning. And I like to start my mornings off. Oh, I ran out of ice. That didn't work. With a cold brew. So this is a homemade Starbucks vanilla cream cold brew. I bought a cold brew maker, which is basically just a big plastic thing that you dump a crap ton of coffee grounds in. Got to do it coarse ground. Put water in it. Sits in the fridge for about 24 hours. Then you put it on this carafe and it just like automatically drains. It's very fancy. Then you dilute it 1:1 coffee to water. Then I make a simple syrup. It's just like 1:1 ratio of sugar to water. Get it warm enough that it'll dissolve. Let it cool. Add some vanilla flavoring. Then you make vanilla cold cream, which is, I think it was 1 cup heavy whipping cream and 4 tablespoons of your vanilla simple syrup. Then you have your coffee, you dilute it 1:1 with water, add some ice, which I was trying to clink, but the ice is melted. And then you put, I think, about 1 ounce of the vanilla cold cream on top.
And in case that wasn't enough for you, audience, what I am watching her describe this while she's drinking this from a mason jar. So in case the Starbucks vanilla was not enough, also mason jar.
Alternatively, you can just Google Starbucks vanilla cold cream. No, vanilla, whatever, cold brew vanilla. Just Google it and it'll tell you how to make it. That's probably easier than me rattling on for a minute.
That's impressive, though. Make your own board games and make your own coffee. I missed out
getting a t-shirt that was like coffee beans and board games. So I'm going to have to go hunt that down again, because that is life.
I've been watching a lot of James Hoffman videos lately on YouTube. I think he's like a former international barista champion or something like that.
Yes. Yes. I think I've watched some of his.
I got hooked on this thing of like why Nespresso capsules are better than everybody else.
Oh, interesting.
Do you, either one of you have like an espresso or one of those like a Keurig or anything like that?
I did do, yeah. They definitely are better than like the supermarket ones. But I think it's because the supermarket ones pierce more and you just get loads more water coming through. And also the water goes everywhere.
It's because they have the patent for the sealant for the cover.
Okay.
It like locks into place. So Nespresso has the like, there's like a thin, like a rubbery silicone thing that holds it in place and locks it in. And they have the patent for that. So you can copy everything else about the capsule, except for the thing that keeps it in place. So like you said, it's actually like it gets more watery.
Yeah.
Cause it's moving.
Interesting. Interesting.
It's like, whoa.
No, I'm too... What's the word I'm looking for? I'm too cool for that. I got to make it by hand. Make it poorly by hand, but I need to make it by hand. Yeah.
That should be like a alternate video series. I'm just like, Jaina makes coffee. Vlog.
We can. Yeah. Jaina makes coffee poorly. Yeah, we can do that. Absolutely.
But you can spell it P-O-U-R-ly, and then it'd be like really funny.
Yeah. I like that. I like that. Let's do it.
Anyway, what I'm drinking is I went to the store and I just bought cider. So you go to the store, you pick a bottle, you bring it to the cash register. the idea, just the local store, just like local tiny store. You go, you say hello to the cashier, you give them the monies, and they give you the bottle. You go home, you open it, you pour it into a glass, and then you drink it.
Are we talking screw top, corkscrew?
Corked. This one was corked.
Oh, fancy. I like that.
This one's from the let's see. This one's from Normandy, France.
Ooh.
Never tried it before. It's pretty good. So, check. We're officially now a conversation podcast. Congratulations. We've passed because we talked about our drinks.
Excellent. Excellent. We are all well hydrated and ready to. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess we're actually like on the board game genre, so we should actually talk about that. So what was your two's favorite board game that you played in the last month? We can start with Jaina this time.
Okay. Favorite board game? I made a list of ones I could talk about.
More interesting. Whatever you want to talk about.
Okay. Let's talk about Cloud Spire. So I have been playing a lot of solo games lately. And now that I have more time when I'm playing solo games, I have decided to dive into those heavier, ridiculous solo games that like you're never going to have time to play with. Like, when are you going to play this with a person? Who's going to sit down with you and spend I don't know how long reading the rules and figuring out every little nitty gritty thing? So someone local to me was selling literally all of Cloud Spire, just pretty much everything, for such a good deal that I could not pass it up. Did I need it? No. Was it on my radar? Barely. But I bought all of it. I had a very kind friend actually taught it to me, which is great. I buy the games and he teaches it to me. It's a perfect arrangement. And it was phenomenal. Like, I was shocked how much I enjoyed it. So if you're not familiar, Cloud Spire is a chip theory game. I'm going to call it a gimmick because it's, yeah, their gimmick is that their games are entirely waterproof. I think it's a legal obligation if you're doing a video of one of their games, at some point during the video, you have to start tossing components into the bathtub. You are obligated to do that. So basically, how do they do that? Most of the counters, everything is poker chips. And like, I'm talking heavily weighted, like those Splendor style, really nice poker chips. Your player boards are neoprene mats. This one actually in Cloud Spire, you've got a hex map in the center. Every single hex, every grid, that's all neoprene. It's just like neoprene on neoprene. Mine came with the play mat. So it's literally neoprene play mat with the hex grid with neoprene on top of it. But that's not even telling you about the game. Cloud Spire is inspired by the MOBA video game genre. I meant to look that up and write down what it is because I don't remember. But basically, do either of you know what MOBA stands for?
Yeah, it's like online multiplayer, right?
Yeah, and I think the general like fighting,
affinity. Right? But I don't yeah, know. Tell me, what does MOBA stand for?
I don't know. I didn't look it up.
It's you not sound like you're going to teach us something.
It's not my research episode. I didn't do any homework.
Oh my goodness gracious.
What it means is that each player has basically their own fortress, their own thing that they're defending, and they're sending out troops. And their troops, generally speaking, their minions, are just going to march towards the opposing person's fortress, and nothing is going to get in their way. Well, okay, things might get in their way, but they're not going to be, basically they're pre-programmed. They're going to take their movement. That's what they're doing. They're marching towards the other person's fortress. Each player also has certain heroes that can go around the map and do different things. So your goal in the game is to get to your opponent's fortress and take it out. And why is it called Cloud Spire, you ask? Well, one of the things you can build are these spires. And of course, mine came with the ridiculous minis. So our spires are like 2 inches off of the mat. You got poker chips stacked up to tell you what they can do. And your spires, as soon as your enemy kind of moves within range, they're going to attack them. And it's basically, it almost felt like a chess puzzle. Of each round, you're spending the resource in the game, the main resource is called source. So you can buy different map hexes if you want to adjust the map because certain troops can only go over certain types of terrain. You then have to pick, okay, what minions are you going to send? What are you going to send out? You've got 3 heroes each, but once they're dead, they're dead. They're out of the game. So, okay, am I going to send a hero? Which hero am I going to send out? And you're planning, okay, this minion's going to move this many spaces and can attack this. You can upgrade your hero. So you have to pre-plan all that. Then you just take turns sending sending everyone out, and you're just hoping that you can get to the opponent's fortress and start dealing damage. And it was shockingly good. It kind of feels like chess. You think you have to think a few moves ahead. Okay, what might they do? You know what minions they're planning, but you don't know what order they're sending them out. There's a whole bunch of extra things that are happening in there, but it's a really interesting puzzle. And it was one of those games where, okay, I understood the rules, I understood how everything happened, but I had to see it happen on the board. I had to see things go completely south to understand the implications of everything. And the main reason why I got it, which I haven't had a chance to try out, is it has a bunch of solo scenarios kind of in a campaign. And apparently the solo scenarios are just like puzzles. It will set up an opponent for you, and you have to figure out, apparently there's a certain puzzle with, there. Of course, there's a bunch of different factions you can play. The base game has four. I think I have three expansion factions with it. So each of these solo scenarios, you're playing with a specific faction. The factions play fairly differently. They all have different upgrades, different minions. They can do different things. So it's going to present to you this puzzle. You need to go do this thing. And then you have to basically figure out that puzzle. And apparently they're pretty tricky. And if you want to be like the completionist, do as best you can win the scenario, but you're also trying to collect these stars. So if you can just beat the scenario and only get like one star. But if you want to, you know, like be that perfectionist, well, you've got to be able to beat the scenario and get the full three stars. And
this sounds like a video game.
Well,
it is based, because MOBA video games. It is exactly based on a video game. I think the other big MOBA game is Guards of Atlantis, which I've heard is more fast-paced. Yes. Bam, bam, bam. This is the more long, drawn out. Okay, you really need to think everything through. There's a lot more rules. It's a lot harder to get into. But if you're someone that really, really wants to dive into a game, it does play up to four, but I've heard that that's just, it's one or two players, really. You can just dive. Like, I imagine that I can spend hours with this game. And it just looks really cool on the table. Yeah.
It sounds like the old power defense games you used to get on, like, Sega Mega Drives and things like that.
Yeah. I think that's exactly it.
Yeah.
We are almost in a weird time where, like, it seems like we're like almost like mixing and matching of like video games are becoming board games and board games are becoming video games.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was never allowed to have a video game console as a kid. So now I'm spending way more money. Yeah, no, I was not. But the joke was my dad told me that if my parents got me a Nintendo or whatever when I was a kid, that I was only allowed to play it on the shortest day of the year. I was embarrassingly old. I was convinced that there was one day of the year that was only like 3 hours long. I was old enough. I should have known that that wasn't true, but he said it in such a convincing way that I just never pushed for it. So now I'm living my video game life through board games. It's more expensive, I think. So thanks, parents.
I like that. Like, you have on one end of the spectrum, you have like chip theory, which is all about like, we're going to make everything waterproof. I think what was the Shut Up and Sit Down that originally did that with one of the games that threw it in the bathtub? I think it was either
probably
them or No Pun Included.
One, yeah. They did it too.
Who originally did that. Yeah. But you have like that end of the spectrum. And then like the day before we're recording this, the Earthborn Rangers review dropped on Shut Up and Sit Down, which is like the complete opposite of environmentally friendly, because everything is environmentally friendly in Earthborn Rangers. So it's like things that will never die and things that are good. Like, you're like, wow.
And it's funny because you can convince yourself that either of them is environmentally friendly. Like, obviously, Earthborn Rangers, everything is going to decompose. That's great. But then with talking to friends about like the chip theory games, they're like, yeah, but it's like, it is literally indestructible. So you're not going to throw that in the garbage. You're going to pass it to someone else who will pass it to someone else who will pass it to someone else. I don't know if I quite buy that.
They have never used a 90s mouse pad.
I have a 90s mouse pad.
Those things, mine ripped to shreds.
Mm.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll check in with me in 30 years and I'll let you know how it's holding up.
That would be impressive. Like, some people, like, you know, I played my game so often that I wore out my cards. The box is not looking great. You know, it feels loved. And it's like, I wore out my neoprene mat.
I was going to say, the only thing I've worn out is Lost Cities. That's looking pretty tatty now. Oh, and Star Realms is pretty tatty. But that's
those ones you have to shuffle. Anyway. Yeah.
So, yeah. But apart from that, most things will take a beating. Apart from, what was it recently that I played that was, it felt like it was the sustainable, this will biodegrade very quickly, but I think it was just to make it cheap. It wasn't a like sustainable thing. It was Sheriff of Nottingham, the Robin Hood edition. Like, it's so flimsy and, like, you punch the punch board and it splits in half, like, across the centre. Which, whilst I really like the IP on it, and I do like the game a lot, is one that I won't sell at the shop because I know someone's going to play two games of it and all the bits are going to fall in half. So, yeah.
What is the Robin Hood edition? Never heard of this.
Like the Disney Robin Hood version with the fox guy? No?
Wait, oh. I did not know that was a thing.
Yep, okay. We're going to both go to Board Game Geek I Go.
Have you paused for a second? Googling is in process.
But it's way better than the old creepy Sheriff of Nottingham pictures that were on it before.
Oh, ben, hey, I just saw that Eric looked up what MOBA means. Multiplayer Online Battle Arena. Thanks, Eric.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Robin Hood.
I am literally...
Oh, wait, it was Robin Hood before.
It was Robin Hood before, yeah, but now it's Disney Robin Hood.
Okay. Oh, I'm literally looking at pictures of the components falling apart as people have punched them out of the boards.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. It's not got the best build quality.
You would think Disney could afford better than that, but...
Yeah. You know what? It's probably because Steamboat Willie went to public domain this year that just...
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
all the budget's gone.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I think it's the only game that I've got where there is actually a, like, tube of Brit stick in the box ready to go to stick the things back together.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no.
That's a ringing endorsement of build quality, isn't it, really?
But it is cool that at least we're to the point where it's like we can actually buy IP games and not have to worry so much about that they're going to be awful games themselves. Mm. That's nice.
It feels like playing roulette now. Like, unless you do your research, if you want to buy an IP game, you're like, ooh, this might be really, really good, but it still might be garbage. It's hard to know.
We might have had a spectacular one of these in the last couple of weeks. So, as we've probably mentioned on a couple of episodes ago, Sam, my wife, and I are big Terry Pratchett and Discworld fans.
Yes.
And we got the Good Omens card game.
Oh, and
we're like, this is going to be excellent. It was awful. It's a campaign with a standard deck of cards, but there's only one index on the top left-hand corner. So if the cards are shuffled and they go upside down, you just can't see what rank it is or what suit it is, which is terrible. The first game of the campaign played itself. There was no decision at all. It was just like, flip over a card. Flip over the alternative deck. Do you win? Yes, no. Which deck runs out first? And like, that was rubbish. And you look through it, there's one that might possibly work, but I do not have the energy to get through eight campaigns to get to that one level to try it. And also, it was that dull that I don't want to go anywhere near it again. So it's always a bit sad when you get an IP that you love and then it gets the kind of bad game treatment.
Oh, that's so unfortunate. I feel like they could do so many interesting things with Good Omens too. Yeah.
The other thing that I find weird, though, when they use IPs is if it always feels lazy when they just take screen grabs of the film. I don't know what it is, but it always feels like a lazy kind of thing to do. And it doesn't look quite right. But yeah, that was a disappointing game. Never mind.
I guess this is something less disappointing.
I've got some much less disappointing things that I've played.
That's how Ben ranks his games. It's either like really disappointing or less disappointing. That's scale.
That's a good scale.
Yeah. I don't actually like games. That's why I run a shop that sells them out.
You're just trying to get them out of here. Just get them out of my area, please.
Not at all.
I will import them from another country so you can get them away from me. That's a good slogan. You should put that. travelgames.co.uk. Get these effing games away from me.
Well, I can think of at least one person who would like to replace the "Have games, will travel" slogan. So maybe they'll probably push for it. But yeah, do you want a more positively reviewed game from my
yes, please
recent things? Okay, so there is two. They're both very short. In that one game consists of 14 cards, and that's Jewel Boy. So you get a deck of 7 cards. This is very heavily pushed at the moment by Ryan from the Trick Talkers and from PGC Discord. He's put together a whole website for it. And you can request a few print and play copies. You can print them off, stick them to Pokemon cards, play it with your friends. It doesn't cost you anything. You can do a donation to the designer if you want to. But this is the best TCG trading card game that I have ever come across, without a doubt. It's so well thought out. So even from like a kind of layout perspective, so if you play something like Magic the Gathering or Pokemon or Flesh and Blood or any of those, they divide the card in half with a line down the middle with text on the bottom half of the card, image on the top. In Jewel Boy, they put the text on the left-hand side of the card in like a third of that space. So when you fan your cards out, you can read every single card in your hand. Like all the information is there so that when you fan out, so they've thought about kind of the layout of it as well. It also, when you buy a deck of it, or if you were to buy a deck of it in Japan, you buy your 7 cards, you duel with someone else, and at the end of it, the loser gets to take 2 cards from the winner's hand and replace them with 2 cards from their hand. So you only ever need 7 cards and you're never going to keep those 7 cards. So there's nothing becomes rare. So that you don't get that kind of weird, I'm going to spend £350 on a card or more and then dominate everyone because I've got the best handful of the best cards and it cost me 20 grand. Everyone's just playing with the same cards. The hands keep moving around. It's just fun. And it solves all those kind of little problems that I think are there.
Well, my question what that would be like, it almost seems like the rich would get richer and the poor would get poorer at that point. Like if you keep losing, you're going to be given the worst cards from the opponent's hand. No, and then you're going to have 2 less cards and then you're going to keep losing because of that.
No, if you lose, you take cards from the winner's hand and replace them with your hand. So you always have 7 cards, but the other thing is there's 2 types of cards. So there's tactics cards and there's unit cards, and you can either play a tactic, a unit, or a tactic and a unit, and you pay for it with your other cards. So there's a currency going on as well. But the funny thing I did when I was playing this with my friend, we've been playing it at lunchtimes as like a kind of chat over a coffee and play a game thing. And I replaced it so that he had no tactic cards. I thought, haha, this is going to make his like playing cards really difficult. Nope, it made him really, really strong. So then I tried giving him loads of dragons because dragons are super powerful, but they cost tons to play. So I thought, I know, that'll rinse all his cards out. Nope, that didn't work. But you can play with so many different strategies of like a card that might be really good for you might be terrible for the other person. So it depends how they combo with the other cards that you've got. But yeah, really, really interesting game. So looking forward to playing a bit more of that. I've got a few more decks to put up and stick to Pokemon cards. So we'll see what happens.
So is the idea that you're supposed to play against like somebody else and then you do like multiple rounds and then you kind of like reset your decks at the end? Like, or are you supposed to kind of like go around to different, because I think I heard about this like as a convention style game where like you quickly play against somebody. Okay. Nice game. You move on to the next person that's like wearing a button or a sticker or something like that that says that like I have Dual Boy. I'm a Dual Boy competitor. Yeah. And then you're by the end of the day, you have a completely different deck. Like, at this point, you can play it however you want.
There's 2 player rules and there's kind of convention rules. So I've been playing it with 2 player rules, just where we pick a random assortment of white cards and black cards, start with 2 black cards and 5 white cards. So it's different every time we play, and then we'll play a couple of rounds and then we'll kind of head off and do our own things after that. So that's how we've been playing it. But in a convention setting or somewhere where you've got more players to play against, some of the cards that you started with might go past like six people. Someone could end up with an entire hand of tactics or an entire hand of dragons or all sorts of stupid stuff could happen. But it's quite nice that you don't really own any of your cards. They're always in jeopardy of being taken away anyway. So I think the interesting thing that they could do with it is they could do it a bit like where you tick off what you've seen. So it's like a Pokedex. So you go, well, I've had this in my hand and I've had this in my hand, but you don't actually have to have it personally. I think it would also fit better to that kind of Pokemon space where it was at schools. So that used to be whoever had the most money could buy the most packs, had the best hands. Whereas with this one, everyone buys a £2-ish pack of cards and they're done. Like, it's not a very good business model, but it is a good fun model, I think. So
that sounds fascinating. I've never heard of this, and I need you to spell that game name for me because I immediately need to go look this up.
Jewel Boy, as in D-U-E-L-B-O-Y.
Okay. I am going to look this up, and I will have thoughts next month. Thank you for forcing me to spend apparently very little more money.
You can play it for free. Just print it out and stick it to Pokemon cards.
Excellent. I'm pretty excited for this. Thank you.
But it's a bit like Keyforge mixed with kind of Marvel Champions mixed with those kind of TCG games, which is a nice blend of stuff. So,
did you two play when you were younger, those kind of TCG games? I was a Yu-Gi-Oh kid. I used to go to Toys R Us every Saturday in the morning, and we'd have like Yu-Gi-Oh tournaments, and we'd have like these little stickers, like sticker books. And you could, once you like got stickers of a certain type, then you got to like claim a card.
Okay.
And I remember being so excited because I won like my 10th game. And so I got to have a free Blue Eyes White Dragon. And it was like a core memory for little Eric.
That's awesome.
I didn't really play much. I joined the Pokemon craze a bit, but I got bored of it very quickly and then decided to monopolize the entire school's population of Weedles. So I had this like massive pile of Weedle cards, which did 10 damage. And it was invincible because you just go, well, I can beat whatever you want just through pure amount that I have. And it became one of the rarest cards around in Stoke. So, yeah.
Because you were hoarding all of them?
Yep.
Yeah, I gotcha.
It's the Weedle horde. But that was just because I got kind of bored with it and decided to try and mess with it and try and take it in a different direction. Apart from that, I've played Flesh and Blood recently, but I only play it as pauper rules. So you're allowed to play cards, but the maximum cost of a card to buy from the shop is like 20p. And then it keeps everyone on an even level. Mm. You don't get anyone buying £1,000 worth of whatever the latest fancy card is. But I've never got into the properly playing TCGs just because it's too expensive and too much of a rabbit hole.
Yeah, but I actually just got introduced to Flesh and Blood last weekend. I've never really played TCGs. I think I collected Pokemon cards as a kid with my neighbor, but we never actually played. We just bought them because that's what kids do. Yeah. But I now have a friend who's getting really into TCGs. So he's basically selling off his board game collection mostly to me. He buys all the TCGs and I buy all the board games. Yeah. And yeah, so he took me, we went to a learning event for Flesh and Blood. Great experience. Sat down with the store owner and one of the other guys there who had a ton of decks. They each took one of us, taught us how to play, slaughtered us 3 times in a row, and we each got a free little starter deck. So that's now he's trying to figure out what style he wants to play for Flesh and Blood so he can go buy Flesh and Blood decks. Yep. And I just get to play them. It's perfect. I love it.
It's one of the things I'm really looking forward to. I think it's in the next year or so, is that they're bringing out player versus environment decks. So you can effectively play Gloomhaven with a character that you've made out of Flesh and Blood characters, which that very much appeals to me.
Flesh and Blood? Is it a Gloomhaven thing?
It's like Magic the Gathering, but instead of you summoning things onto a field, you have a character and they will play like what their character's occupation is. So if you've got a ninja, it'll be fast and very low damage. And you have your character, you have their weapons, you have their armor, their shoes, their gloves, and their hat. And basically you're just dueling. So you attack, you can defend, and then there's a response to that and a response to that. It's quite a complicated kind of order of how things work. But there's so many options that come to mind. So if you take damage, you can prevent it by your shoes falling off, which is my favorite thing. because you can use your shoes to defend, and they've got defense value. But in my head, it's just like your shoes fall off and you don't get hurt.
You literally pick them up and just huck them at the other person. Yeah. And that just like spikes them out.
I'm like thinking of those like vines of like mothers like taking off their flip flop to like throw at their kids. And then I'm like, that's in a game called Flesh and Blood.
But, yeah, no, pretty much. I think what struck me the most as like brand new to it was, yeah, like you said, there's all these different occupations. So there's a ninja. I tried, oh gosh, it was a brute. But even within like the brute class, I tried one of the guy's brute decks. My friend tried a different one. And they played so differently, like every deck, everything. So you can really pick like what's your play style. There were some with like a bunch of sneak attacks and you could like plant traps for the other person. I think my favorite was still the ninja was the first one I played because I loved it's kind of had that Euro-y feel of like, okay, if I can make this the third card I play in this attack chain. So you're trying to figure out, you're maybe trying to psych the person out because yeah, they can block an attack, but maybe you can do extra damage if you can get to like three unblocks. So it's like, maybe if I just do like one, because if they use a card to block, that's one fewer card they're going to have in their hand for their turn. So yeah, they all played so differently. It was really interesting to see all the combos, and I can see it would take you a while to learn and get good at the different styles too.
Yeah. I started with a ninja. I'm still playing the ninja just because it takes so long to get used to playing a character. And I also quite like the my friend calls it the death by a thousand pokes, because you can just do this annoying thing where at the beginning of your turn, you just do one damage and they have to either block it or take it. And yeah, so I just keep doing that every single turn. It'll be like, and a single poke. Yeah.
The Facebook poke as a game.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Just retheme the entire game to that. It would work.
We'll put it in the metaverse so that we know nobody will ever play it.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that sounds so fun. And that's the like entire reason I haven't like researched these kind of games is because I know that I will enjoy it, and I have a very addictive personality. So I know that I will like go out and buy everything. So I like intentionally do not research TCGs or anything.
You just need to find a friend that'll do it for you and buy everything for you. It's great. Yeah. I highly recommend 10 out of 10.
Or even better way of getting into it is you go into the TCG shop, play the free demo game, and then ask if anyone's got any bulk that they want to get rid of. And they will just pile upon you mountains and mountains of 1 to 5 P cards and just play with those.
I think just I should probably find somebody who like runs a board game shop. I feel like they should be able to get me some games for like nothing. I don't know why. Yeah. I'll find someone someday.
Certainly can't find Flesh and Blood. They only sell to brick and mortar stores.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's part of the name. So the idea was that it's to bring people together to play it in physical form.
That makes sense. Okay.
So which I think is a good thing really for kind of local communities and things. So what have you been playing anyway?
Well, so we've been like playing a bunch of stuff because we're just like trying to like move back and forth again. So we're like, all right, what can we like play so we can bring it back? And there was a game that we played called Gin Crafters, and eagle-eyed people will notice that we put a video review of it on our YouTube and deleted it within 12 hours because I posted it like at 10 p.m. European time, 4 p.m. Eastern time, and like woke up and like saw like the analytics or whatever, and it was like the worst performing video we have ever had on the channel. And I noticed like, and you can like see on the YouTube analytics like where people are like stop watching the video, and pretty consistently the people who watch our channel like generally they watch it like all the way through, so that it's like, okay, this, and then I can see how to play it, and then I can see how it goes pretty consistently on that, which is cool. Nobody made it through the how to teach part. which I can completely understand because it sounds boring as all get out. Because really, like, it's like, it's not boring, but it's like one of those like really solid, like 6 or 7 out of 10 where you're like not offended by it or anything. You're just not going to probably like shout from the rooftops about it or anything. It was like, that was fine. It's basically a game in which you're crafting gin crafters, crafting gin. Very good. Yep. Excellent description, Eric. But you do this by like, very simply, you can go to your like side job. You get 2 actions per turn. Go to your side job so you get 3 coins. Or pick a card from the display. Like you can buy a card from the display. Or you can make a gin with those cards. Very, very simple. Kind of like gateway level game. But with the Kickstarter, they released that and then they released expansions with it. And for the Kickstarter price, you got them all for like the base game price. And then now that it's at retail, you get the base game for the retail price and then you add in the extensions or the expansion, right? I would never play this without the expansion because holy smokes, like the expansion makes it better because it actually gives everybody asymmetric powers. It gives people like end game, like more end game goals or like mid game goals actually. So that you have something to aim for instead of just anything. And it was such a weird video to make. And I'm almost kind of glad that like it didn't do well and I could take it off so I could like think about it a little bit more. Because I think it's more interesting than anything that like, what do you do when you have a game that's like, I made this game in which it's supposed to be playable for everybody. So I have that as like the core game.
Yep.
Right? Anybody can play this. I could teach this to literally anybody. Even if they haven't touched a board game other than Scrabble or Clue, they could figure out how to play this game. Adding in the expansion is just like a little bit harder, but holy smokes, like I feel like it should actually just be part of the base game. But because it's not, it ends up costing you somewhere around like $70 to get both with import fees. I think it's somewhere around like closer to $50, just like base if you're able to buy it at the store. So you go, it's really hard to like think about it because you have to think about the game with the expansion. And how are you supposed to think about that when you're talking about a game? Because it's like, I want to tell you about this game I played. It's good, but also please make sure you buy the expansion, which adds to the cost of it. And then we can start talking about how we feel about the game, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you're buying this game, I can't help in my brain but think and compare it to Distilled. Which I feel like if you're buying the base of Gin Crafters plus expansions is probably going to be the same price as Distilled.
Yep.
So, and I know Distilled, I haven't actually played it, but I know it's going to be like maybe a more quote unquote gamery game. But who then do you think Gin Crafters is for?
And that's the question. It's like, okay, at the same time, like this is definitely for like, if I'm going to introduce somebody who maybe is not familiar with games, they like gin though.
So let me introduce them to this game. It's like, okay, here's an intro game for people who like spirits and cocktails.
But at the same time, it's also like, hey, you need to pay $50 or $60 to get the best version of this game. And it's like, I don't know. Feels like this should be a Target game or like a game that you have at like the bookstore. It feels like it should be that kind of game. Where somebody can go walk up to it and go, hey, I like cocktails. Or I have a friend that has cocktails. I'm looking for a birthday present. This would be a great, this looks like it worked. Like it's easy. Anybody can learn it. I don't have to be there to teach them how to play it. It's really attractive. Cool. This feels like it should be that kind of game and should be like $25 or $30.
Right.
Does it play in a similar space to like Perfumery and those kind of games? Because that would be a, like on the outset of looking at the boxes and generally what it is, it feels like it's playing in the same space, but I haven't really looked into it too much.
No, I think Perfumery is a bit more, the rules overhead is like, I think Perfumery is a little bit more, there's more rules overhead to it and it's a less forgiving than this.
Okay.
Gin Crafters is very much like, you're going to probably figure out how to get points in this game very, very easily. There's pretty much no way you can mess it up. The way you lose this game is a lot of luck.
Okay. Yep. Yep.
Because like if you have a gin, for example, like there's a display of like 4 botanical ingredients. Could be something like yuzu because you want a yuzu infused gin. Or, wow, and I'm like totally drawing a blank now. Lavender. something like that. Okay. But your gin requires three of these kind of ingredients. You need like a fruit or an herb in order to make this recipe. If none of those come up,
you're not building it.
You know, you can replenish it. You can pay to replenish, but oftentimes it's like, all right, you have to use your first action to go to get a job so that you have the money. So then you can pay to replenish the thing. But most of the time you're not the only one waiting for that.
And then you're replenishing it for someone else potentially.
Basically. And then it has the wingspan problem in which towards the end of the game, everybody is so close in points that it becomes the, my best action to do is actually to draw end game scorecards and hope I luck into actually having already met one of those conditions. So it's like, I wasn't planning to have the most Japanese gins of any of us here, but hey, I just drew this end game card that says if I have more, I got 6 points. Well, when everybody's like 2 or 3 points apart, you just lucked into the win.
Right. And do the expansion help fix some of that?
Yes, because like the expansion helps, like, for example, one of the things you can buy is points, just straight up. You can buy points or you can buy an extra turn so that you could basically take your first turn and like, okay, I'm going to replenish the market. I'm going to distill the gin. And then that way I can use a bonus turn and then I just replenish the market for me.
Okay. Okay.
So it helps balance that out a bit. And then you have mid-game condition cards that give you a little bit of points or some kind of bonus. So like, for example, if you're able to, in your hand, have 4 fruits, because there just happened to be so many fruits that were being left on the thing that maybe you don't need, but now you got the mid-game condition and that allows you actually that you get to draw a couple end-game bonus cards for free.
Okay. Okay.
Which is why I'm like, the expansions are really necessary.
And then it makes it a $70 game.
$70. It's like... Yeah, that's what I was just trying to think about. That was the most like interesting for me lately, is just like, where do you go with this kind of thing? Like, I don't want to tell people like $60 is too much for like a 7.5, 8 out of 10 game. Like 7.5 out of 10. Don't pay $60 for that. But it's like, it really just feels like more expensive and a little bit out of place from where I actually imagine this succeeding in.
Yeah. It feels like, just from what you're describing. Yeah. It feels like that $25-$30 card game that you bring out there for the lols, chatting with friends type thing, rather than a serious, more gamery strategic type game.
Is That's just what I've been cards? Thinking about.
Mostly just cards.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Except for the board. It's like literally all cards.
Okay.
I could see somebody like a Matigo, or somebody like an Asmodee Ravensburger, even just like picking this up and like, all right, we can make this cheaper.
Right. Yeah. It looks super pretty though. And I do appreciate a nice looking game.
I was going to say, it's one of those that would look very nice on the bookshelf with.
Do Game Studios do a really, really good job there. The name of their company is really funny.
Okay.
Are you guys familiar with Rakugo?
No.
It's oftentimes comedic, but it's like somebody literally sits there like very fancy look, like in a kimono and stuff. And then they just tell a story. That's it. And there's just like famous stories that they tell. And that's where this comes from. They spell it like Ju Game, but the original is how they spell it in Japanese. Ju Game. Basically, it's that. So it's like a couple could not think of a suitable name for their newborn son. The father went to the local temple and asked the chief priest to think of an auspicious name. The priest suggested Jugemu and several other names. The father could not decide which name he preferred and therefore gave the baby all the names that suggested. So Jugemu's full name is Jugemu Jugemu Goku no Surikire Kajari Soigo no Suigoyo Matsu Onrai Matsu Furai Matsu Kuneru Tokoro ni Sumu Tokoro Yabura Koji no Pura Koji Pai Pao Popo Pai Po no Shuringan Shuringan no Guri Nai Gunin Dai no Pon Poko Pi no Pon Koko Na no Chokyu Me no Chosuke. In one version of the tale, Jugemu got into a fight with a friend one day, and the friend suffered a large bump on his head. In protest, he went crying to Jugame's parents. However, due to the amount of time it took to recite his name, by the time he finished, the bump on his head had already healed. In another version, he had already died by the time he asked for help. That's where their name comes from.
That's hilarious.
They should definitely put it in full on the side of the box. And it'd be like the size of Gloomhaven.
Every box is like...
But they are literally... like storytellers who specialize in telling the story. And so they can like, they, and it's supposed to be saying like that.
Mm.
And they'll like expand the story out. And so they'll say this full name like 10 times in the span of 5 minutes.
Oh my God.
But yeah, anyway.
So I think the new thing that we need to do then in the podcast is, so last time you were whistling the Mickey Mouse thing.
Oh.
Now we've got you to.
I love that.
Yeah, it was so good.
That was so embarrassing.
No, it was really good. No, was really good.
Like no.
And now we've got the very long song name.
Yes.
So.
But next question, just so we can like move a little bit forward, would be to, this is your chance to kind of tease out what you learned from this last month, because all of us have done like non-review episodes in the last month, interviewed some interesting people, learned about some interesting things. So what was something interesting that you two learned during your episodes this month for February? We'll start with Jaina. I don't remember who went first last time. And Ben has a very like ghostly face. Look on his face. In yeah. which he was like, I was supposed to learn something.
I've been around the bowl a few times. There's a running thing of me being a goldfish. So,
Okay, let's see. Okay, trick taking. I think, and I'm going to take kind of like some of my previous episodes, everything all together. I don't know if this is a learn, but this is just kind of a realization. I find it fascinating. So trick taking, I asked this in a pop quiz. You can just listen to this episode and get the answer. Trick taking was the first card game, pretty much, most likely. And it was developed in the 1300s. It's just wild to me from the 1300s to, there was a lot, yeah, okay, there was changes in cards. And I think I'm going to do the history of cards, like playing cards. How have they changed? But looking at like from the 1300s to say the 1800s, so you got 500 years of history there. And then you look at from the 1800s to now. Yeah, cards changed, games changed, but still there isn't tons and tons of variety. But you look at the changes from like the 1800s, the 1900s to now is just wild. You go from most commonly your standard deck of French cards, which is the normal 52 card deck that most people think of. Sure, you've got Italian decks of cards. You've got a couple different varieties. Can play a whole bunch of different games from those, which is pretty cool. My guess is just the increase in manufacturing, Industrial Revolution, all of a sudden from just a normal deck of cards, you get deck building. You get card crafting, you get collectible card games, trading card games, just the explosion that has happened from something that started in the 1300s that now is just like gone so wide, so far sideways and so many different things is just, it's just mind boggling to me. It's crazy. And I think people, like, it kind of feels like, oh, maybe we're stagnating. Are we still coming up with creative things? I don't know. When was the peak of creativity? But I feel like it's still happening. And it just makes me really excited. I don't know. And interested to see where we go. Are we eventually going to bottleneck and start narrowing back down again? But I mean, the creativity people had with just a 52 card deck, the hundreds of thousands of different games you can play with that. Versus now it's just, okay, every game's going to have different cards, change this, change that, layer cards, do this, do that. It's just, I don't know. I just find that really interesting and fascinating. But I guess maybe that's why I talk about the history of board games.
It's cool to see like how much of that might be influenced by, because I don't think we're able to know it yet. Of like, I think we're going to get to the point where people are going to start being like, my childhood game that I played was something like Wingspan.
Yes.
What is going to happen when they grow up to become board game designers? Because I still think like people are still at the point where like they grew up with these kind of games. Like in Minnesota, it was Euchre. Like everybody played Euchre. Everybody knew somebody who played Euchre. There's the Bridge people. There was Mahjong people. Like you still had these very traditional games that people grew up in. In Japan, it's still Dai Fugo, which you might know, rich man, poor man, I think is what it comes to. And so that's why trick taking is so huge there. That's what Taiki Shinzawa said in his interview, is like, that's why I like trick taking, is because like that's how I like first started, is in Dai Fugo. So what happens when people grow up and it's like, oh, my childhood game was Wingspan.
when it feels like there's so many more different games that could be your childhood game, or you could grow up with, I don't know, a collection, your parents have 300 different games that you grew play.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. I guess.
Yeah. That was a fun episode. I'll put the link to that, of course, down, but that was a really interesting episode.
Mm. Yeah.
However, you've been.
What have I learned? I have learned that my memory is not very good.
Well, you interviewed two. Well, you interviewed like one and a half.
It's definitely two. So we interviewed Maisie Hatchard, who writes the Japan Analog blog and translates for various different board game companies in Japan. And I also interviewed this guy called Eric, who kind of runs a podcast. I don't think anyone knows who he is, but
he's a half.
Doesn't sound familiar. Yeah,
he does. I think he's pretty good at whistling. I think that might be what he's known for.
It's definitely not for running a successful podcast.
I learned lots of bits of stuff, but I can't.
Okay, well, Ben, I've got a question for you then, related. Have you do you have a history? Do you have like journalism history? Have you interviewed people before, or is this kind of like your first time interviewing? Because I've interviewed one or two people and I feel like I'm awful at it. It is challenging. So how has that gone for you?
I don't have a background in that at all. My background's a right mess of things. So just as a kind of quick highlights of weird career choices, started off making oatcakes in Stoke, which is like the local delicacy thing. Oh, cool. Which is like a cheese thing inside like a wrap that you'd have for breakfast. I worked as an outdoor instructor. I went to university to do geology and environmental science. Then I was a geophysicist. Then I was a PhD student and a lecturer for a bit. And now I run a shop. I've jumped around a fair amount. In That's kind of amazing. My teen years, I did a lot of street teaming for bands. So like promoting bands like Snow Patrol and Stereophonics and Foo Fighters and things like that. And a few littler ones. But yeah, I jump around a fair amount. So I haven't done interviews before, but I do kind of draw on a bit of the lecturing for that. And a bit of the reason why I got into doing the band promotion was I didn't really like, I was quite shy. I still am to an extent if there's more than kind of five or six people. But it forced me to go and speak to people I didn't know, because you get free backstage tickets, but you have to go and collect emails off absolutely everybody and give them badges. So it forced me to go and interact with people. And that's kind of where I got that from. And because I liked the bands I was promoting, you could always have a conversation with them. You didn't have that difficult icebreaker. So I've kind of just pulled from a bit of that and a bit from the lecturing. And the biggest problem I have with kind of interviews and recording things for podcasts is the introduction. I still haven't worked out what I'm doing with that. It just feels quite awkward, but I'm sure it'll settle in over time.
Nice. So. That's really cool. That's fascinating. I love that.
You said you've done some interviewing too?
Oh, not really. Just for previous podcasts, just chatting with people about games they designed or what have you. Very minimal. I am not good at it. So I leave that to you.
Who did you interview?
I chatted with someone. His name is Frank. He developed during COVID. You know how, I don't know about you guys, but I mean, I was still kind of working, but mostly just did nothing. This guy had an idea. He decided he designed and published a game called Pathways. It's a dexterity game. It's actually pretty cool. So yeah, well, I was just sitting around doing nothing. He was in his garage developing prototypes. So in Pathways, you have a central board. It's ended up being a bamboo board. And there's a bunch of little circular holes in it. And the goal of the game, there's a bunch of different modes you can play. Generally speaking, the goal of the game is you need to flick your disc from your side and it needs to land in one of those holes on your opponent's side of the board. But of course, you're flicking a disc across a board that is full of holes, which is a little tricky. Generally speaking, at some point, your disc is going to fall into one of those holes. So as you're flicking, as people, you know, you're taking turns flicking discs back and forth, they start filling those holes in the middle, making it easier to flick your disc all the way across the board. So it was fascinating because he just started with his own prototypes. He made them. He ended up publishing it himself. So he's talked to like a bunch of different production facilities, did the whole thing himself. So it was really fascinating just chatting with him and learning about the process and how this game came from an idea in his head, deciding, hey, I want to design a game, to like funding a successful Kickstarter. And it's arrived, it's here. It's just really cool. And it turns out he was pretty local to me. So that was really interesting too.
What do you two think is like the hardest part of interviewing?
Keeping things from being awkward. Making it seem like a normal conversation.
Yeah, or getting stuck on a random word, which happens, but
I think we're doing a really good job demonstrating the awkward part right now.
That's actually how I got good at whistling. It was actually just to fill awkward silences, which is why I got a lot of practice.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
That's you can either do that or humming elevator music.
Yeah, I think the hardest one is the talking over each other a bit, because you can kind of have a conversation how we are and it works. But as soon as you start, someone talks over the other person, you start doing that thing that you do in a hallway where you both step to the left and then both step to the right and you keep getting in each other's way. That's quite hard.
Yeah, it takes a lot of good editing and I hate editing. So good job, guys.
It definitely helps having a screen on so you can see, like, you can nod instead of saying something. But
I'm demonstrating that now. It makes for great podcasting. You can't see it, but I was nodding.
We need like one of those like audio descriptions for the podcast of like, currently Ben is nodding.
Falls off his chair. Ben has fallen backwards off his chair into a pile of board games.
If you're going to fall, that's the best place to land, honestly.
That's how you get ding and dents, ladies and gentlemen.
Actually, I have had my first casualty since I opened the shop. One that I've imported.
Oh?
Yeah. It's called The Road to Muscle. It's looking a bit squished.
The Road to what?
Road to Muscle. I think it's up here.
I feel like this is going to be some sort of exercise-based game.
No, it looks really goth, to be quite honest.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely going to a My Chemical Romance concert.
That looks awesome.
And then it's like root but goth on the back. There you go. There's some like weird...
Yeah, that's exactly what you just said is exactly what it looks like. Root but goth.
It's got a bit of a squish going on. sad little thing, but it's full of all sorts of exciting... This is the thing with Japanese games. Like, we have... I know, idea. We've got jigsaw pieces. We have glass beads from a fish tank. We have... big old dice from AliExpress. Like, also, I don't know how any of this comes together, but yeah.
Okay. So the name of this game is called The Narrow Road to Muscle, right? What do you think, based on that title, that this game is about?
I have no idea.
It's either a bodybuilding game about building up muscles, or it's about traversing this really terrifying path to find seafood. I'm not sure how the goth animals fit in, but it's one of those two.
Okay. It's all about composing a haiku.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
You're going to travel composing haikus with dice, and then you're going to collect muscle parts, whatever the heck that means. Well, because you have learned about a book of haiku by the haiku master Macho Basho. Basho, very famous, actually, haiku person. But there you go. You're getting muscle parts, which are victory points.
Do the muscle parts help with your haikus?
That'd be clearly.
Yeah, it makes sense. Cool. I like it.
Does everyone avoid playing the Vagabond?
No, didn't you listen to the episode? The Vagabond is the most ingenious class.
It's the one I want to play, to be honest. But I'm a menace. So
I think it's more fun if you have somebody playing the Vagabond who has like tabletop RPG experience.
When
I play the Vagabond, I am playing it like a bard, which is my class.
Yeah.
So like I am like dee, 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 I'm around and I'm gonna pop you in. I'm running around like that. But I have one last question before we go, and that is, because like all of us, well, I'm not allowed personally to buy board games because I'm in this contest that Jaina's running very meanly, talking about all the games that she's buying for off of people selling them to her, whatever. But what is the most interesting or best purchase you have made in February? It can be a board game. It could be a non-board game. Whatever you want. We'll start with Ben over there because his smile is creeping me out and I don't want it to last much longer.
Thanks. Yeah. No worries. So I could go down the game route. I could go down the video game console route. But I'm actually going to go for something really strange, which is some Japanese stationery. As most people who've, well, anyone who's bought from the shop knows, they get a handwritten note in every different box. And so I write a lot of these. And then I found these pens on when I was importing some stuff from Japan. And they have two nibs to them in two different colors. And they're slightly offset. And when you write, they look like one of those kind of images that you would look at with the red and blue glasses on. So it would go 3D. If that makes sense. That might be a 90s reference, but
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Those cardboard ones. So they're slightly offset. It's very trippy. I thought they'd look quite good, but actually it's kind of headache inducing. But
your game boxes are going to need to come with a warning of like might induce migraines.
Yeah. But it's also really good for drawing funny sketches of the Makai Fuda noodle monster. So anyone who's ordered that has ended up with a weird sketch of the noodle monster done with these double pens. And if you're particularly unfortunate, I might have written the note entirely in the headache-inducing pens too. Depends.
I need to immediately go buy that game from you just for the artwork.
It's definitely the flying spaghetti monster from like Pastafarianism, I think.
Excellent.
Ah, you got to start like experimenting with like a bunch of different pens and like see what you get. Like you got to get like an invisible ink pen and just start putting like papers in there and be like, that was supposed to be like a handwritten note in here. It's just a blank piece of paper. See how many people actually just throw it away. One of them will have like a golden ticket of just like, you get a free game.
When I started doing the origami things for the mystery boxes, which was a terrible idea, but I'm still going with it, never mind. I then started thinking maybe I could write the note on the origami paper and then fold it up, and I was like, but no one's going to destroy the origami animal to read the note. That's just making more work for no reason. So yeah, I haven't quite gone down that route just yet.
Do you know the Yurindo channel, either of you, since you both kind of like that stuff? It's a YouTube channel and they do reviews, but they're very, very funny. Sorry, what were you saying, Jaina?
Oh, I was just going to say, I have a dream of making, like, I like doing print and play games. And I have a dream where you do that, but instead of, like, buying plastic pieces, you make your player pieces out of origami. I don't know that.
That would be such a cool sea salt and paper print and play.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I'm pretty sure I thought of it before I saw sea salt and paper, but maybe I didn't. But I'm going to say I did because I need to be unique. We're going to go with
you
that.
You did.
But. Okay, yeah. Good. Yeah, I'm sure.
I want to do like crochet sea salt and paper. So I think that'd be quite cool.
Yes.
But I can't crochet for toffee. So that's not really going
to
work.
That does, yeah, that will cause a problem, I have to say, yeah.
But I can do it, but it's messy and it has holes in it. And last time I made a hat, it was a perfectly functional hat, but every time there was a hole, I'd buy a small stuffed toy and then sew it into the hole. So it had like a mouse sticking out on one side and a... It was the messiest hat you've ever seen in your life, but it was quite funny. So
I love that. I love that.
That's good stuff. How about you, Jaina? What's the most interesting or best thing you've bought in February?
Okay, I will stick with board games. So this contest that Eric mentioned, I participated in that last year, made it to the end, bought no games. I think everyone's sick of hearing me say that, but I'm just very proud. But I'm all or nothing. I bought nothing last year, so I'm buying all the things this year. So
I don't know if that's what that means.
I think
that phrase means what you think it means.
I think that's exactly what it means. You buy none games and then you buy all games.
That's an and. So, that's all and nothing.
Yes, exactly. You alternate. That's how that works.
Oh, okay.
It's like buying two cakes so you can cake and eat.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, see, Ben gets me. So someone local to me, I have a great local buy-sell Facebook group for games, and someone posted a lot of games. And I mean a lot, like in the sense that it was like a big lot of games. I don't know how many. It was a lot. Posted pictures of them all and was like, I need these all gone. $250. You have to take all of them. I will not sell one. I will not sell 77 of these. I will sell all of them. I'm like, okay, that sounds really cool, but I don't need to spend that right now. So I'm not going to do it. But then I looked at the pictures and I thought about it. And 2 hours later, I'm like, there's some really good games in there. There's some weird ones, some old ones, some things I've never heard of. There was some kind of cool classic Nizia games, some old Uwe games, along with a couple of modern ones. But I was like, I don't need it. 2 hours later, I regretted everything. I'm like, no, I need to go buy this. Like, that's too good to pass up. Of course, it was already pending. Someone had already picked it up. So I just messaged on the post. I'm like, okay, whoever bought these, if you want to get rid of the old Knizia games and some others, I would take them off your hands. So thankfully, I kind of knew the guy. He messaged me. And he's like, okay, well, just what list me the games you want. So I gave him a list of 16 games, most of them old games. I have no idea if they're any good, but they're like, you know, designers like Wolfgang Kramer, Uwe Rosenberg, Knizia. Like, you've heard of these designers, you know, big design, but these are games from like the 90s. I talk about the history of board games. Some of these I'd even talked about on previous podcasts. So it's I ended brand. Up. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I ended up with 16 new games. I haven't played any of them, but I'm pretty pumped. It turned out only three of them weren't in English, and two of them did have printed rules translations. So I'm pretty pumped about that. I'm going to have to figure out how to translate. I think it was called Farmerland. It's an Uwe Rosenberg game.
I was going to be like, Farmerland. I wonder who that one is.
I know. Super bizarre. The art. There's like some weird looking chickens on this box. I'm a little concerned, but I'm also pretty excited. Some of them are brand new. I don't know if you guys have heard of Cafe International. It won the Spiel, and I can't remember which year. It was brand new in box. The sticker on it says from the Rio Grande, like lending library or prototype. Like, it's literally, it must have been one of their demo copies, but it is still unpunched. The rule book is brand new. It's a very interesting, eclectic collection of games. And maybe I'm just going to have to play them all. And one of my episodes is just talking about all these games from like the 90s. I'm pretty excited. Not going to lie. Okay, sorry. I found it. It's called Farmarama. And I think I need everyone to go look that up. The artwork is trippy. I don't even know when that was published. I am super excited to try all of these games.
Oh my goodness.
Is it the big brown box edition?
No, it's blue. The artwork is super trippy.
Oh yeah, that is absolutely going to be the cover art for this episode. I wasn't going to actually do individual cover art for episodes, but I have changed my mind.
It's this great, is it. Right? Yeah. Yes, those chickens. Yeah, right there. Those.
That
chickens.
Is it. Congratulations. That is going to be the cover art for this episode.
So we're going to go with that game specifically is the weirdest purchase that I made in February. That one right there.
That is very off-brand for an Uwe game. I was expecting like brown and beige.
Right?
Isn't yeah. If once you open the box, are all the cards brown and beige? Because that would make me feel better.
I don't remember. I opened it. There were some weird pieces. I found some other weird pieces in a different box that are so weird. I'm pretty sure they came from that game. And I just saw the one card was in German and I'm like, ooh, this is going to be a fun time. That's the one game that was not in English.
The eyes are just, man, everything else looks like an Uwe game except for the animals that are just stoked to be here.
So maybe that's what I'll do. I will slowly play through these games, and every monthly roundup, I will share my game of the month from weird games from the 90s.
There you go. It's gonna that could be a series in of itself. Sting.
That, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Maybe that'll be like a subsection of my history podcast is I'm just going to find all of these historical games, 70s, 80s, 90s, 60s, what have you. Thrift stores are going to be my best friend this year.
Playing Through the Decades with Jaina.
Yes, I love it.
You're going to have to find some royalty-free music there, like really bad 90s.
I am excellent at finding royalty-free crappy music.
And I think that's a great place to wrap it up, because I have kept these two here for 2 hours almost on a Friday night. What are you doing this weekend, guys?
Sleeping.
Good plan.
Packing boxes.
Learning Magic the Gathering.
Ooh. All right.
Yep. Pretty pumped.
So are you ready to tap out of this podcast then?
Yeah. That is a magic term. Tapping a card. Yeah, you gotta twist that thing sideways. Nailed it, guys. I'm gonna kill it this weekend.
Well, thank you everybody for joining us today. Arigatou gozaimashita. Until next time, じゃあね。
Bye.